Welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Last weekend, we were treated to our second event back at the UFC Apex. That was after Fight Island. I'm your host, Jake Jones, and my co-host this week, the man is back in town. Our residential DJ, MMA fighter, and all-round talent, it's the one and only Sean Gilley.
Oh, yeah.
How you doing, man?
I love that. I'm doing all right, mate. How are you? You all right?
Keeping all good, my end, mate. Man. Been busy, been doing what I'm doing, but at the same time, feeling good at the moment, feeling like I'm happy now. Although I love Fight Island, I'm happy that we've got weekly events now. It's not on a Wednesday or anything like that. You've got your week then to get yourself prepared, to get your interviews in, and then you've got Saturday to just sit back, watch and enjoy.
Exactly, just watch a fight.
Yeah, well, I would say before we kick into our recaps, over the course of the next few weeks, we may be having some of the UK's finest MMA stars featuring on the show, with the recently signed UFC star Rhys McKee, the potential Cage Warriors double champion Mason Jones, and one of Cage Warriors' finest prospects, Ian the Future Gary, all in contact to come on the show. So that's something we've got exciting, hopefully lined up over the next month or so. So to start our recapping of last weekend's events, Sean, what did you think of the card overall?
Oh, like, there was some mad knockouts we're going to get into. Like, was it Darius spinning that back fist?
Yeah, Beneil Dariush.
Wow.
Mate, what happened there? I mean, that was, you've highlighted the best one. Genuinely, I mean, that's all the first part we're going to break into, but oh my God, I just, seeing that happen, seeing that live, was like, Jesus, he's put himself back on the map for sure. I mean, coming into this card, I felt quite disheartened, really, because it didn't really have that headliner wow factor to me. I think the main event was a good fight, and even the event was the fight was pay-per-view worthy. But for me, it's not main card worthy. Lewis versus Lechik wasn't going to be main card, and if I'm honest, I think even at co-main at best, it could have been there. But the fight itself actually did deliver nicely, and overall, the card had some great moments. I mean, as you've just mentioned, let's start off. My opinion, fight of the night. Beneil Dariush versus Scott Holtzman. Man, this was good. This was insane. I mean, talk us through.
Basically, I know it's like what you say, like the knockout speaks for itself, to be honest. But yeah, he came in overweight, didn't he?
He did, by a few pounds, yeah.
Yeah, and he said the post interview to give, if he got the performance of the night to give, he's bonus to the opposite opponent. But that knockout, man. That knockout was just unbelievable.
What you just said there, I found that quite interesting. Well, the 50k bonus thing is that, unfortunately, there was no way that he was going to get the 50k bonus. He came in and, what was it, £3 over or so? I might have got that wrong there, but I think because he came in overweight, there is an act, he can't physically get the bonus. So that was a bit of a shame, but I liked the notion that he put out there that basically he doesn't deserve this bonus and give it to his opponent. I thought that was a really nice idea because, let's be honest, if he had made weight, yes, he wouldn't be doing that suggestion, but there's no doubt that would have been performance of the night. No doubt whatsoever.
100%, yeah.
So I thought that was a nice notion from him. And Beneil's really shocked me in his recent performances. As he was always one of them guys who was very dangerous, but he kind of went back and forth in the 155 pounds picture. He was never up there with the likes of McGregor, Poirier, Alvarez, etc. He was just one of them guys who lurked in the top 15, really. And then, he had that draw with Evan Dunham, and then on either side of that, he had TKO or KO losses to Edson Barbosa and Alex Hernandez. So I just think it was those 12 months from March 2017 to 2018 was just a massive setback in what was appearing to be a very strong contender. So now, he actually really boasts an incredible spree. I think it's a 5-fight win streak now, with a record of 19-4-1. He genuinely looks like the real deal, and he showed that on Saturday night. Exactly. I mean, I think Scott Holtzman is no joke, and he'd never been KO'd before. So now, in the space of under 5 minutes, Dariush managed to drop Holtzman with that hard knee that he came in with, and then basically caught him for the next 2 minutes just in trouble the whole time. He just was causing him a problem, and you never really saw Holtzman recover. And then he finally landed that peach of the spinning forearm that just knocked him out cold. And it was such a clean performance. And although I think there is a slight worry, I think Dariush does still get clipped in fights as well. But I think he's going to get a big name after this. That was such a great performance. And lots of people are suggesting out there that the fight with Paul Felder is the one to go ahead now. And I love that fight.
Yeah, that's a hype fight. People like the fans would love to see our fight. I would personally love to see our fight, to be honest.
Exactly. Well, I mean, Felder's coming off a loss and currently sits 7th in the rankings. I think Dariush sits at 14th at the moment, but that obviously could be subject to change over the next month when we see what happens in the lightweight picture. But these guys are both veterans of the sport. They're both veterans in the UFC too. So in general, I think they're going to put on a mouth-watering performance. It's just generally going to be a great fight that loads of people tune into. I know that Felder's spoken about the idea of retiring and calling it a day. So why not go for it here then? If he beats a guy like Dariush, he proves that he's still amongst the very best in that octagon and even in the lightweight division. He'll step up to the mark and for him, I would say if he wins that, then he potentially goes for him versus Hooker too, because arguably he won that first matchup. Mm-hmm. So then if he loses, fair enough, he gets that retirement. He works as a commentator for the UFC. He doesn't lose everything.
No, that's not a bad job. He's not cut.
Exactly. So he goes out as a legend, and then Dariush steps in for a run in the top 10, maybe even top 5 picture. So as I said, I like the idea of what happens next to Dariush, and I think he's definitely impressed me in the sense that in the past, he'd always been seen as the guy lurking in the top 15. Now that he's put on, I said, 5 performances now against really solid opponents like Dracar Closer, Thiago Moises, these guys are good like prospects in the sport, and Dariush has put them out. So, as I said, I would really like to see him push up into the picture now.
Yeah, I would love to see that too. That Paul Felder fight's actually got me like, ooh,
exactly,
goosebumps, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, next up, let's have a short touch up on the performance of Darren Stewart. So he submitted Mackie Bertolo in the early minutes of round number 1. And first things first, I thought it was a touching tribute to his friend Jairus Shepherd, who tragically lost his life last month when he was stabbed to death at his 30th birthday party. That was news that broke the MMA world, and although not everyone knew who Jairus was, this story, everyone who knows about MMA knew who he was, and all these, especially UK fighters, he was a real icon to them and someone who was really in their picture. So for that to happen, Stewart deserves all the praise he's going to get, because he came into this fight with emotions flaring and he had no ill respect towards Bertolo, but then come fight night, he went in there and he broke the man down in minutes. Yeah. And he in his post-fight, he spoke about how hard this year has been for him and to step in the cage and fight a man who effectively wants to go in there and knock you out. You have to be mature and you have to be able to control yourself, and that's exactly what Stewart did. He harnessed the energy that he had and the anger and took it out of his system in the best way possible. Not just in terms of fighting, but as I said, he didn't go in there and get emotional and try and inflict damage on Bertolo. He just went in there and he put on such a clean performance. And as I said, props to him for doing that. I think he definitely deserved the 50k bonus that he got. So what's next for him?
I'm not sure. He looked really good. He came in on 3 weeks notice, was it? And he came up, was yep. it 99 kg, was it?
Yeah, I believe
that
so.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm not really too sure, but obviously a top 10.
Well, so my suggestion would be, I think he should fight Marvin Vettori now. So they were initially due to fight at UFC London. So why not make that happen next time around? Obviously, the event in London is likely to happen in March, because it happens in March pretty much every year. But I would love to see that fight happen. Vettori is ranked. I think Vettori is 13th or 14th. And they're both great fighters. So Dana, make it happen. As you've just said, top 10. Maybe Vittori's just out with that. But as I said, I think he needs a ranked opponent now, because he put on a performance that shows he's definitely up there in that middleweight picture.
Yeah, I guess that was a quick finish. Yeah.
Exactly, and although it might not suggest that he's going to be top 5 at the moment, he's definitely deserving of one of the opponents there who's looking to rise, because Stewart is once more very well known in the sport and in general offers a hard fight for a lot of people. So I would really like to see him get that shot now and as I said, try and push up into them rankings, get his head focused in, because he's definitely a talent in the UFC. So let's talk about another middleweight bout. The return of the former middleweight champ, Chris Weidman. What did you think, mate?
them were some really good rounds. Three rounds. Was it three rounds, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Went three rounds, yeah.
So, yeah. Just, he looked like the fight was, I don't know, you may disagree, but he looked a bit slow, Wade, when I thought.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree with you at all. I'm glad you said it, mate. Because for me, I'm going to say the same thing. It was warning signals all over.
Yeah.
Me and Liam spoke last week about this, and we said that we basically think Weidman needs to go in there and show the former champion, show that heart, and show, basically shock the world. Yeah. And for me, yes, he won, but it wasn't convincing enough to suggest that he can cut with the likes of the killers in the middleweight division.
Yeah, exactly.
As you said, for me, he did look a bit slow, and although he then did end up dominating a bit, it wasn't convincing enough. It wasn't like going in there and thinking, like Khabib does, where you go, there's just no way you can stop him.
Yeah.
It just felt a little bit slow and a little bit lackluster for me.
Yeah. Like I said, a former champion, he should be ready. He should be wanting that fight so bad.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And I mean, one very interesting thing that I think has come from this, though, which has circulated across social media a lot, is the notion of Weidman versus Rockhold 2.
Yeah.
And if that makes sense. And I totally agree. Weidman's is only on his first win back now from his previous fights, where I think he won 1 out of 5. So Weidman, out of his last 6 fights, has won 2. He's definitely not in the picture yet for the title.
Yeah.
But Rockhold recently announced that he's decided not to retire. So why not make this happen? Make this a money fight. Run it back and whack it in a pay-per-view card as maybe the 4th or 5th fight from the main event. Maybe even open the main card a bit. They might put it as the second, like the co-main. But overall, Weidman versus Rockhold 2 attracts a lot of names, in my opinion. A lot of eyes to the sport, sorry. And I'd definitely be down to watch that. And I think that makes sense for both fighters. They're not deserving of a top 5 shot or anything like that at the moment. They're definitely veterans of the sport. People who bring in a lot of attention. And also, they will get a nice paycheck out of it.
Yeah, 100%. A touch on that. I've just seen the story on Instagram just there. Luke Rockhold actually would like to fight Darren Till.
Rockhold would like Till?
Yeah.
See, that's really interesting. You put that now. That's caught me off guard, but I like that a lot as well. I think, actually, there was talk about Till facing Anderson Silva, but I think Till versus Rockhold makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I know that Till was up for the Silva fight, so I don't see why he wouldn't be up for the Rockhold fight. And then, if I'm honest, I think that makes sense for both fighters. I think, although Till obviously pushed himself up in the rankings when he beat Gastelum, he's only had 2 fights in middleweight. So he doesn't need to stay in that top 5 picture just yet in terms of the opponents he faces. But Rockhold versus Till is definitely either a main event or co-main for a pay-per-view card. So I'm so for that.
Yeah,
I mean, how would you see that fight going down?
It would be a slugger as well. I love slugger fights. I love people who stand the field, like Robert Whittaker and Darren Till, take a chess match. Like, I think that would go that way as well. Darren Till's not going to take a step back, and Rockhold's not going to take a step back. So it's going to be just hands on hand.
What I think, though, I think Till might get a nice little KO win there. I think Till's striking is different to the people who have knocked out Rockhold, like Romero or Jan Blachowicz. I think that he doesn't necessarily offer that danger. However, we know Till can knock people down. Rockhold holds his chin quite high and his guard down. But having said that, Rockhold's ability to his kicks and generally his kickboxing is very, very good. So I think that it could be dangerous for Till. But equally, as I said, I think that is an attractive fight for Till. It puts him back in that picture as well to say, as I said, if he goes in there and maybe knocks out Rockhold, why isn't he a contender in middleweight again to kind of go for a top 5 fight or even number 1 contender spot? So I like that fight. Thank you for bringing that up. Well, let's move on to our final fight from the UFC card. It was the main event between 2 heavyweight specialists, Derek Lewis versus Alex Alenik. What did you think of this fight?
Was it a right hand? I just knocked him down and that was it. That was it. That was gone. That was it.
Well, funny enough, that is kind of all you can say about the fight. I mean, for me, that's not a bad thing. Because
it's heavyweight, isn't it?
Yeah, there was no surprises for me here. Nothing sprung up and made me go, shit, what just happened? We saw that going down that way. Or It could have obviously. It's like if Oleksyk had submitted him, we wouldn't have been shocked.
It was close, wasn't it? That was a close
very close. Yeah. So it was the way I expected. I mean, a first or second round finish from one of the guys was exactly what I thought was going to happen. It was always more likely to be Lewis. I think he looked good and he looked sharp and strong in the fight. I mean, because as you've just mentioned, Oleksyk nearly had him out. He caught him in literally, I think it was just a judo clinch position.
It was like a bulldog.
Yeah, but it was Lewis on his back. So yeah. I think that was just cutting off his airflow. And Lewis even said in his post-fight speech that, he was struggling to breathe. So besides that, it was literally all about Lewis's explosive power on display. Okay. And a few times, Lewis nearly clipped Alex and knocked him out. But it was only a matter of time before one of them explosive moments actually landed. And then, obviously, from there, he got the TKO win. Funnily enough, though, it actually reminded me of Walt Harris's knockout of Oleksyk. So he threw the flying knee, which landed to Oleksyk's body, and then he finished him with a heavy hand that sent him down, and then finished him with ground and pound. So I found that quite interesting that, like, it seems like maybe the way Alex fights is quite susceptible to that flying knee. Maybe he leaves his body open when he throws his jab out there, which is why you've seen Lewis and Walt Harris both throw the same knee at him. And as I said, both times it's caught him, it's winded him, and then he's been finished literally 10 seconds later. So I liked that. I thought it was I thought it was a clean finish. And for me, we have to talk about now what's next. And I'm slightly agitated that Lewis versus Blades is the main suggestion. Yeah. And the reason I'm annoyed at that is because I totally agree that's the fight to make. But for me, that fight should have happened already. Blades fought Volkov. Blades was ranked third, fighting Volkov, who was seventh. Lewis fought Oleksyk when Lewis was ranked fourth and Oleksyk was ranked 10th. So for me, why not have made Oleksyk versus Volkov, which is now being discussed, and then Blades versus Lewis beforehand? I didn't really get why these fights have been made, because they've both led to Blades versus Lewis, but in the first place, Blades and Lewis haven't moved up the rankings. They're still third and fourth, as they always were. So I agree this fight should be made, but I kind of feel like it's a bit of a shitter on Blades, because I think he's due his title shot already. He's beat JDS, and if he loses to Lewis, then I think he starts over again. And I don't see why we need that to happen. Basically, I think it goes down to the winner of Saturday night versus Ngannou next. I think that's what the UFC are holding out for, is whoever wins Saturday between Cormier and Miocic, then Ngannou is next. I kind of feel that leaves Lewis and Blades to fight each other, but it doesn't mean they're doing it for any reason other than the fact that, well, someone above him is going to get that shot next, so...
An interim title, maybe?
Well, exactly. Well, that could be the case, especially if Cormier goes and wins. If Cormier wins and retires, then there will be an interim title, which is potentially going to be Miocic versus Ngannou, or the winner of Blades and Lewis versus Ngannou for the title. I see that also being a possibility. But as I said, I just feel like, don't get me wrong, I love Ngannou. I think that he also deserves his shot. But I kind of feel like they've held out for this trilogy fight for so long that the middleweight title picture has been a little bit frozen now for a while. It's been a little bit back and forth, and it's been a little bit... We kind of need some of these top stars to get their shots now. Yeah. And as I said, I think hopefully after Blades and Lewis happens, that's what we see is more of a clear picture on who is going to fight next. And we're not going to have rank 3 versus rank 10, etc. We're going to have people who are due to fight each other fighting. Because, as I said, also, Oleksyk, yes, he's ranked 10 and he's coming off a win, but one, it wasn't necessarily a convincing win, and two, he was kind of just hovering in the top 10. It wasn't like he was one of these guys who had kind of, like that Yuri Prochaska, who came in and knocked out Volkan Ozdemir. Volkan was ranked 7th in the world, Prochaska had never fought in the UFC before, so he comes in and he knocks out Ozdemir. So fair enough, if Prochaska now gets the ranked 3 guy, well, yeah, fair enough, because you've literally catapulted yourself into the division. Yeah. Whereas I said, someone like Oleksyk, where you're just kind of hovering, you're having some wins, some losses, you're just back and forth. Why are you fighting the ranked 3 guy in the world? Or ranked 4, sorry. Do you know what I mean? It's as I said, I would like to see this heavyweight picture clear up a bit now and start making a bit more sense.
Yeah, it's all over the place, isn't it?
Well, before we go on to our previews of this weekend's card, I also wanted to talk about a big fight from Bellator MMA last weekend, which sent the MMA world crazy. You know what I'm talking about, man. Mike Chandler's KO over Benson Henderson. What did you think?
To be honest, I didn't even think Benson Henderson was out. I thought he was going to stand back up straight away.
Yeah.
But then he just flopped. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, what on earth happened? Literally, I mean, Mike Chandler is a dangerous, dangerous guy. KO and Henderson like that was insane. It was, and also what I like is it was a tough fight for Mike. Because now he's gone into free agency, and he was always going into free agency from this fight. So to take a guy like Benson as your last bout before other promotions take a look at you, that's big. Benson is a veteran of the sport,
yeah.
And he's never really offered an easy fight to anyone. All around, he is good. So for Mike to go in there and finish him like that was genuinely incredible. It really puts him on that marker now. And also, at the end of it, he thanked Bellator. He said, I think it was that they would like to thank Scott Coker and thank Bellator. So I don't see him staying in Bellator now. Surely his career is incomplete without a move to the UFC. Surely. I mean, maybe... He's carrying on, yeah. No, far away.
I would love... I've been dreaming this fight for ages. I would love to see Michael Chandler versus Eddie Alvarez again.
Damn. That's a shout, yeah? Well, obviously, that'd be one championship taking, Mike, which is very possible. That's what I mean. Other promotions are going to look at him now. So whether it's PFL, the UFC, or one championship, if Eddie and Mike can be done for the one championship belt... Oh. That's good as well. I think I was looking at a statistic earlier where one championship is, I think, ranked fourth in the world for online subscription viewership or something like that. I think it's the WWE first, the NBA, the NFL, the UFC. So one championship are fifth in the world. So that's what I mean. They can definitely get them figures in. And someone like Chandler versus Alvarez would also definitely attract a lot of the American market to go watch that fight. Because I think one also make all their fights free to watch using their app. So,
yeah.
Damn, I'll be up for that.
What about Rise? Is Rise? Yeah, Rise.
Rising? Yeah.
Yeah, that even... Any promotion would love to see that fight.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. I mean, for me, though, I wouldn't mind seeing Chandler get his shot in the UFC because I think he offers genuine title contention and I'd love to see his first fight against a guy like Poirier. Now, yes, that chucks him straight into the top five picture, and Poirier might not want to take that fight. But for me, Chandler deserves it. He puts on incredible performances.
Yeah.
I think he's 21-5 at the moment, and I think he offers a lot of them 155 pounders. There we are. A tough fight, because in general, he is just a very sharp fighter. All around, he looks very good, and. As I said, yes, people would argue that maybe chucking him straight into someone like Poirier is a bit of a gift. But Poirier's not an easy fight. But no, then also, definitely. if you suggest someone like Chandler versus Hooker, why does Chandler want Hooker? Chandler's one of the biggest names in Bellator MMA now. Hooker's not one of the biggest names in the UFC.
Yeah.
So you kind of need to chuck him at someone who is a massive name as well. You make a bit of a super fight straight away. Like Askren came in against Lawler, wasn't it, as his first?
Yeah, that was
right. I mean, you're taking on the former champion there. That's a fight that everyone tuned in for. So that's what I'd like to see with someone like Chandler. The only thing I didn't like is I think Chandler called out Connor, saying that he drops him in a round or two.
Nah.
Oh, everyone wants Connor.
Well,
exactly. And thing is, mate, I'd want to fight Connor if I was even offered a fraction of the money you get for fighting him. Do you know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, he would drop me in a second. But the point is, everyone wants Connor. And I kind of just wish that people didn't attach themselves to his name, because there's some people, like James Gallagher says it a lot in Bellator, where he says, oh, I'm making you famous. Well, no, you're not really, mate, because although James is a brilliant, brilliant fighter and a great name for the sport, he's not making these guys famous because he's still yet to build his name. Connor is making people famous because what he has done for the sport, like Connor has raised the sport incredibly and put it really on the marker. So everyone seems to just want that fight with him, even though the fight doesn't make sense.
No,
people will just say, oh yeah, I want Connor. People in middleweight will say, oh yeah, I want Connor. Yeah, you want him because you want the money. So. As I said, unless the fight makes sense, I just wish these fighters would stop calling out Connor.
Exactly. Like, Michael Chandler's got a massive name.
Yeah.
He's been in the sport for years, man. To even call out Conor McGregor.
And as you said, you've just put it, Mike Chandler's been in this sport for years. He's a massive name. He is still not on that level with McGregor yet. And don't get me wrong, if he gets maybe 5 fights in the UFC and wins all of them, fair. Because Conor will want that fight too. But people need to stop just dragging the name. I mean, Khamzat Chimaev did it as well. He called Conor out. And it's like, you've won 2 fights in the UFC, man. Come on. Don't get me wrong.
Sorry, man. It's just like Fedor. Yeah. He's a massive name in Bellator, but not as big as McGregor. I'm going to risk that and seeing that.
No, so it's a bold statement. Fedor's obviously one of the biggest names in the sport. But no, I don't. I think people just don't give Conor enough respect in the sense that, yes, I know he's made his mistakes as well. But there is no doubt for me that the UFC wouldn't be where it is today without him.
Yeah,
he has changed so much. He's put so much on the market. If you went down a high street and you asked 100 people, do they know what the UFC stands for? Do they know what the UFC is? They might go, yeah, they might answer. They might even say, is that the one that Conor McGregor fights in?
Yeah.
But if you ask someone who Conor McGregor is, I think you get a much more majority of people knowing who he is compared to knowing exactly what the UFC is. So, as I said, I think that people do just attach themselves to him, and I wish they had a bit more respect for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Don't go with someone else's name. But that's my big rant over about it. Overall, though, what did you think of the Bellator card?
Bellator card wasn't. I love Bellator.
So do I.
Yeah. AJ, was it? No, was it? I can't
AJ Agazam.
That's the one, see. I got that. That was a good fight. It was a rivalry fight as well.
AJ Agazam versus Chris Lencioni.
Just watch it as well.
I mean, people do need to go out there and watch that fight, because I was saying about this last week with Liam, that fight was entertaining, but not always for the right reasons either. This was a pure grudge match, a rivalry between 2 show-offs of the sport. Yeah. And I don't always like Lencioni and what he stands for, but I liked him in this fight. I think he was playing the fight right. I think he won it completely. And in general, he was winding up Agazam, and Agazam just didn't like it. I think Agazam reacted like a baby, mate. He wouldn't shake his hand or anything like that. Yes, you've had some trash talk, but I mean, did you see the headbutt?
No, I missed it.
Right, so they're on the ground, and Agazam, without a doubt, headbutts him on the floor. So he's mounting Lencioni and headbutts him. Right, get him wrong, it's dirty. That's fine, move on. Agazam, in the post-fight, is going, yeah, and did you see that? Yeah, he pulled me up towards him. So no. Agazam's not saying that he headbutted him. Agazam's saying that Lencioni pulled Agazam's head towards him to make it look like he headbutted him. And it's like, oh, come on. So as I said, that was also entertaining. And also, we had Valerie Lareda get her win as well. Yeah. I mean, she's looking great as well for the sport. And I genuinely think that Bellator have had some brilliant, brilliant fights on recently that are really showing some top contenders. And maybe their opponents aren't UFC caliber, but I think these fighters are. And I really do think Bellator in the next few years could be challenging for some really, really good fighters.
Yeah. And what I would love to see, which is probably never going to happen, is how Bama and Bellator came together. I would love to see for a one-off UFC and Bellator come together.
See, I think that won't happen due to the UFC. So Bellator would be up for that. Bellator do that a lot. Bellator still did that with Ryzen quite recently, I believe it was. Yeah. So I think that, as you said, that could happen. But I just don't think we will ever see that under the roof of the UFC. So for me, the only way that happens is if potentially someone like the UFC collapses or Bellator collapses, and then you get these fighters kind of signed up by one of the other promotions, or a specific one night off where, say, UFC bring in Bellator veterans to fight. But it's not going to be Bellator and the UFC collaborating. It's going to be one of the companies basically liquidation for one of them. Yeah. And then you'll see some of the free agents be taken.
Oh, that makes me sad.
Exactly. Same here, mate. Well, that's our recap of last weekend's bout. All fine and dandy. So let's move on to next weekend's card. And it's a big one. UFC 252, Miocic versus Cormier 3. The trilogy to settle who's the greatest heavyweight of all time. Now, before we talk about that main event, let's talk about the other heavyweight bout featuring Junior Dos Santos versus Jairzinho Rozenstruik. What do you think of this fight?
Am I getting this right? Dos Santos lost to Blades last time.
I believe so, yep.
Yeah. Personal opinion, I think DeSantis is losing his name at the minute. Mm-hmm. He's gone quiet. So I think this is a win, a must win for DeSantis.
I totally agree with you. I mean, see, I find this fight a hard one to call because will it be another fight like Jairzinho versus Overeem where pretty much Jairzinho gets dominated throughout the fight but then lands that one punch KO to put the slightly older guy out? And as you've just mentioned there, is he slightly losing it? Or will Rozenstruik be exposed again and be KO'd by a guy who is the former champion? So, as you've just said, for me, it is a do or die for DeSantis. He needs to go in there and he needs to really put on a performance. And for me, I do see him potentially doing that. I see him utilising some of his wrestling and tiring Rozenstruik out. And then I also see him kind of, I said, maybe in the first round, just getting his distance. Maybe in the second round, then bringing him down to the ground, tiring Rozenstruik out. And then I reckon late in the second or a third round, TKO victory for him. And that's a bold statement, but both these guys are bold, so it's going to fit in there. Yeah. So I do think that it could go completely the other way around. I mean, Biggie Boy, he's so powerful, and the way he knocks people out is just incredible. So he could go in there and he could do that. And we've seen JDS take a few KO losses now, so there's no doubt that Rozenstruik could do that to him. We have to see which way it goes. So I was so disappointed when Ngannou KO'd Jairzinho because I actually think he could have done so much more in that fight, and I think he made a critical error against Ngannou. Ngannou came in windmilling with those wild looping hooks. And the thing is, don't get me wrong, when you've got power like that, you don't need that much technique. But he was swinging wild. So Rozenstruik tried to land a leg kick as he was backing off. Now, I know he's got a kickboxing background, but when a guy like Ngannou's flying towards you, it's a little leg kick ain't going to do a lot.
No.
And as I said, it wasn't like he swung his hips into it and looked to sweep him off his feet. It was kind of just a little touch. And I thought, why are you doing that? I don't think he expected Francis to come in that aggressive. And he never really let his hands go. Or he didn't really have an opportunity to let his hands go because he didn't allow himself to get any space. So I would love to see him get another shot at these top five guys. And I think there's no doubt he has potential. But I think the Ngannou loss was a big setback for him because it kind of exposed him massively. I think that they kind of needed... It was like when Costa faced Romero. Them two put on an absolute performance of the ages. It was one of the fights of the year. So you kind of wanted Ngannou Rozenstruik to do a similar thing. Even if they'd gone in there in one round and both knocked each other down and then one finished with a knockout, well, that's still incredibly entertaining. But it kind of, all that happened after that fight is everyone went silent and everyone just was in awe of how good Ngannou was. So that's what I mean. I think it kind of stripped away from Rozenstruik, and I think he didn't really allow himself. I know it was like a 30-second KO, and I know that coming against a guy like Ngannou, if he clips you, you're out anyway. But as I said, he didn't. I think Rozenstruik made that error. I don't think it was just Ngannou's raw power. I think Rozenstruik, as I said, if you watch that replay, watch, he throws a little leg kick in there and he's trying to back off. And then he's trying to throw strikes. So he never really set himself up. He never really did anything other than make a big error when you're trying to move away from someone swinging at you. And then he got clipped. So as I said, I would like to see him regain all his focus now. If he gets the win over JDS, then, as I said, give him a few more shots. At maybe even the winner of Blades versus Lewis as well. We'll just have to see where that goes.
That sounds good.
Well, now let's move on to a co-main event. Marlon Vera versus Sugar Sean O'Malley. I mean, what is there to say? Will we see the Sugar Show shine again?
Yeah, I'm a personal favourite of Sugar Sean. I love his style. I love his confidence. He's undefeated, so this is... And he's got, this is a top opponent. It's not just an easy fight.
I totally agree with you. This fight is both these guys' toughest fight to date.
Yeah.
Sean O'Malley is no joke. And overall, he's so scary and fast and he's so skilled. So Vera will need to watch out for this man striking because I genuinely believe this, that I think it's probably pretty much better than anyone else's in the sport at the moment. He might be the cleanest striker I've seen in the UFC present. I'm not saying of all time, but just at the moment, it's hard to point someone else out who's got as clean and as slick striking as O'Malley. Because you've got people like Cody Garbrandt, who's so fast.
Yeah.
amazing, but O'Malley seems to have it all around. Is he doesn't really get hit that much, and as I said, he can throw a jab, he can throw his cross, or he'll throw a spinning kick at you. Do you know what I mean? He can knock you out in many ways, and I think that's what his danger is that just all around.
Yeah.
Yeah, all around, he's unpredictable, but he's so clean. So, he moves so well, he slips in and out so quickly, and I think all around he's a killer at £135. However, Vera is equally no joke, and he's coming off what I felt was a win, although it was on record, it was a loss to Song Yadong. Now, he faced a young guy with KO power there, and he came out pretty unscraped. As I said, on record, he lost the fight, but I think it was one of the fights as well where instantly afterwards, Dana said, no, that fight went the wrong way. Vera won that fight. So as I said, I think Vera has been in there now with a guy who was known for KOing people clean. So O'Malley's got a similar thing in that, yes, he's kind of getting this name for these highlight reel knockouts, but Vera's now been in there with someone like that. So Vera, it's down to O'Malley to shine, and it's down to Vera to utilise his experience and wrestling skills. And I think Sean could genuinely risk losing his O to the Ecuadorian.
Yeah.
But either way, somewhere down the line, I'd love to see the winner of this going all the way to the top. And I think O'Malley will probably do it. On record, I would say that I think O'Malley's going to get the KO victory. But equally, if I was to see some decent betting odds for Vera to, say, get a unanimous decision win, I would take that as well. Because I think Vera, all around, is a very, very good fighter, and he's a tough fight for anyone. And for me, the loser of this fight has to fight Nate Wood in London. Not because Nate's a UK guy in that, but so many fans have called for both of these guys to face him.
Yeah.
So Nate's always been spoken about to fight Vera due to Vera's win over Brad Pickett in Brad's final fight. And the same goes with Wood and O'Malley seem to always have, not necessarily beef over Twitter, they're always linked to each other. The loser of this story would be hanging on to their top 15 spot. And Nate is on the brink of being in the top 15. I think he might be ranked 16th if there was that unofficial ranking there. So why not make that happen? As I said, I think this fight offers some really, really interesting kind of developments. And I said, either way, I think the winner pushes themselves into the top 10 bantamweight picture and genuinely pushes themselves into not just the top 10 picture, but potentially getting maybe three fights away from the title.
Yeah. Yeah. That fight always stands out to me, Cody Garbrandt versus Sugar O'Malley. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But that would be a really good fight to watch.
Well, it would be possibly the two best strikers in the sport coming together, so I totally agree. But well, let's talk about our final fight, the biggest one. One of the biggest fights of the year, the trilogy, Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier for the heavyweight title. Sean, talk to me.
Right, where do I start? Like, Daniel Cormier is one of my favourite fighters.
Yeah.
Like, not just because he's fighting, it's just his swag, man. The way how he goes about stuff, he's commentating. Like, he's a full package fighter, to be honest.
I think DC has to be in there in the top five UFC guys ever. As in, I'm not saying just as a fighter, but just who he is for the sport. Yeah. If you think of the UFC, DC's in there for me. GSP's in there as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? DC's on that level. He's just an incredible, incredible guy for the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, first thing I guess to talk about is what went down in the first fight between these two where DC knocked out Miocic. I mean, that shocked everyone. I think we all kind of expected, I don't think anyone ruled DC out to win, but I don't think people expected him to win like that.
Yeah.
I mean,
that was a mad fight as well. Like, yeah. I'm so hyped for this fight on Saturday.
Well, so for me, as the first fight shocked everything, it kind of put the heavyweight picture into a really strange scene because everyone thought Miocic was the baddest man on the planet. Everyone thought Miocic was this guy who just couldn't be beaten because he was breaking the records. However, then DC comes in, and I think it was round one or two that he knocks him out. And you think, shit, now what happens? So then the second fight came around, and that was long overdue as well, because Miocic deserved that rematch straight away. I don't care what other people say, like, Miocic had something like four consecutive defences. He needed that. He needed that immediate rematch, and as in the end, he got it. So It nearly happened again, though. If you watch through the second fight between these guys, there was quite a few times where DC caught Miocic in the clinch and threw that overhand right again. Mm-hmm. And it nearly caught him. Now, there was obviously a lot of eye pokes as well, and there's a lot of other things that kind of brought up in the match. But there was a few times where I genuinely thought, it's going to happen again. Stipe is going to get KO'd. But then the third and fourth round changed everything. Yeah. This fight, the second fight between DC and Miocic, was one of the best I've ever seen. Because the alteration that he made mid-round or in the fight was just incredible. That is a pure example of where someone makes an adaptation to the person they're fighting and gets the win from that. As I said, those body shots, I think he landed about 6 or 7. But you saw every single one that landed destroyed DC. But also you saw that that was part of the game plan now. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't just the idea that he caught him with a clean punch. It was the idea that DC was exposed every time he threw that. Every time DC arm was up, he threw a little gut punch, a little liver shot. And if you've ever been hit with a liver shot, it takes everything out of you. And as I said, when you get 7-0 in the fight, you see why then DC went on to get TKO'd, because he just adapted so well in that fight, Miocic did. And as I said, that's, I was so shocked because I saw it going down the way the first fight went, and then that happened. So that's why the third fight around is so interesting, because both these guys have a TKO win over each other.
Yeah.
That's why I think kind of it's got a question now. Does this go all 5 rounds, or do we see someone else get knocked out? I personally think, I think DC's going to get the win. I would like Miocic to get the win for the picture of what happens for the heavyweight division, but I think DC's going to knock him out again, because I know DC has spoken about utilising his wrestling a lot more in this fight. That will be interesting as well, because I think Miocic is a phenomenal wrestler too. So I think the first time around, Miocic was very susceptible to that same overhand that knocked him out in the first fight. If DC can try and expose that in round one or two, then I think that's where he gets the win. Mm-hmm. But if we see more of a grappling contest between these guys, then I really don't know who comes out on top, because they're both so elite level that I don't necessarily know who's going to come out as the better wrestler. So we'll have to see.
That is going to be a good fight, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
now.
Well, and it also begs the question, what's next? Is it retirement for either of these guys? I don't think Miocic would retire, but I think DC retires regardless of the result.
He said that in a post interview with Paul Fowler. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Did you see? Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I think DC's going to retire, but I don't necessarily think Miocic does. But then, as I said, what is next? So if DC wins and retires, who gets the next shot? Is it Ngannou? Or is it Miocic versus Ngannou? Do you know what I mean? Is Miocic, if Miocic comes off a loss for the title, does he get put in for the title when it's vacated?
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It offers quite an interesting picture. And I also think it also offers an interesting picture of the legacy of these guys. If DC wins, he goes 23-2 in this sport and retires as one of the greatest. Miocic, if he wins, will be 20-3 in the sport and will still be fighting. So I think there's no doubt that they're in the picture for the greatest of all time. As in, I'm not saying they're better than someone like Khabib or GSP's record, but just in general, they are up there with the heavyweight division and light heavyweight division's best fighters. If you talk about the light heavyweight division, if you ever broke it down, you would do an injustice to not mention DC's name. And the same goes in the heavyweight division. If you were to talk about the heavyweight division, you can't talk about it without talking about Miocic. Mm-hmm. But the only thing I do think that needs to be shined upon, and that I don't particularly like, is the UFC promoting this as the winner of this is the heavyweight greatest of all time.
Yeah.
But I don't agree, because DC hasn't had that many fights at heavyweight. Yes, he's had a few, but I think he moved heavyweight at 19-1 or something. So he's only had about 4 fights at heavyweight. Mm. Now, for me, although I think he is definitely one of the greatest of all times in the entire sport,
definitely,
I don't know if that does an injustice to some of the other heavyweights that have fought. So I'm just looking now. In fact, his first fight at heavyweight was his KO over Miocic. And then he fought Derek Lewis and got a win. And then he lost to Miocic. So he's had 3 fights and he's 2-1 in the heavyweight division. I don't think you could be the heavyweight GOAT.
No. So,
and this is what Dana White's saying. I'm just looking at here. There's no debate that Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier trilogy winner is the heavyweight GOAT. Now, I've got to disagree, because yes, obviously there's potential in the future for someone else to become the heavyweight GOAT. But as I said, when you've only had three fights at heavyweight, don't get me wrong, DC might be classed as a GOAT in general, or for the light heavyweight division. But as I said, someone like Miocic, whose entire career has been at heavyweight, I think you've got to start looking at that and saying, well, this whole idea of who the GOAT is needs to be dumbed down a little bit. The GOAT isn't an official title. It's just someone's opinion. Yeah. Whereas someone like the BMF title was obviously an official title. Exactly. So I think that this fight is just going to be a cracker between two of the sport's greatest.
Yeah, legends.
It doesn't have to be because they're in that division. They are just two of the sport's legends that are also still in their prime, that are also still doing, still probably better than anyone else below them.
Exactly.
And that's what I look forward to.
And to see it, a GOAT in the heavyweight division when the heavyweight division's all over, as we were just talking about before, is a bit weird.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, yes, as I said, they might be seen as GOATs because they're better than anyone else beneath them, but overall, once more, why does it have to be made the GOAT? Why does it have to be made the best person there? Because as I said, it's actually just an unofficial title. It's not. It doesn't stand for anything. It's just, as you've said, they're just two legends of the sport, and that's all I want to see.
Yeah.
But for now, that is all we have time for. I think we've been running this for just short of an hour now, so thank you for tuning in to the Ultimate MMA Podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to us, and make sure to tune in next week, where we'll recap the results of UFC 252 and preview the next card, which takes place on August the 22nd, where Frankie Edgar meets the bantamweight Pedro Munhoz in the main event. I've been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to our co-host this week, Sean Gilley, for joining us again. It's been a blast, hasn't it?
I love it. I love this.
Mate, it's always a laugh, and as I said, you did bits for our figures the other week, and as I said, we're just going to keep this going, hopefully keep this raising, and as I said, next week we've got some good shit to talk about.
Yeah.
UFC 252, we've only shined on three fights, and there is so many more that we can talk about.
There's some news that's just dropped in the last hour. The Paige VanZant has just signed to Bare Knuckle Boxing.
Oh, wow. Well, at the end of our shows, we always like to do a little news update. And as you said, you've just brought it to us. You brought us two tonight. But Paige VanZant for Bare Knuckle Fighting, that's a very interesting proposition. I think that someone like Paige, Paige has a win over Beck Rawlings in the past, who Beck also went on to be a bare knuckle fighter. I think bare knuckle fighting seems to be one of these things at the moment, which is definitely, they're definitely taking a lot of the UFC veterans and then people in the sport who are going to attract some figures to you. I think Wanderlei Silva also made the move there. So that's an interesting move, and I'll be interested to see how PVZ does in that, because she's a good fighter for sure.
She's a good striker, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. But also, she was also known for doing her submissions. So, when she's just going to be standing there boxing.
Exactly.
And also, I believe, was Paige not good with her taekwondo? Which you can't do in bare knuckle boxing. You can't throw any kicks.
You can't throw any kicks, no.
Wow. Well, when we find out when her debut is, we'll let everyone know, and we'll definitely tune into that as well, because that's an interesting piece of news. Thank you for bringing it to us. Well, guys, it was our pleasure. We look forward to next week's UMMA podcast, and once more, thank you for tuning in, and let us know what you think.